Ashley Campbell is back. Welcome. Hi. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
Good morning. It's early morning on a release week as you tear into the weekend. It's today is Thursday, but tomorrow the album comes out officially. And what a long time coming, and what a culmination of many things. And I guess my first question is, if you were to fill in the blank, this album is a culmination of what are the elements that go through your head? What finally made this work? We've been hearing that Ashley Campbell is going to release her own music for a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's a culmination of my musical taste, I guess, because I love the old school. I love the new school. So I would say it's got a lot of elements of classic country or Americana, but it also has a little bit of a modern edge to it.
Did you ever feel like you had to choose and then decide, I don't have to choose among a direction there where a certain audience would initially obviously get the place you were coming from and then think, maybe let's scramble it up?
Yeah, I think so. I just made music. I tried to do what I thought was best for each song, and obviously we wanted them all to sound like they're on the same album, but yeah, I just followed what I thought was best for each song and just what sounded great, and that's what I went with.
You've been writing these for quite some time. Talk about the scope of time from which these songs come.
Well, I moved to Nashville in 2013, and that's when I started writing songs, basically just, you know, almost every day I was writing songs. And, you know, I went through a lot. I had a record deal with Big Machine, and that just wasn't the right fit for me. And so, you know, 4 years later, I've got all these songs and ready to go. And I was like, I need to make an album. I can't wait for another record deal. I just have to make this music and get it out there and start living my career, you know?
I see. Yeah, that's true. A record deal can be either an accelerant or the exact opposite. It can slow everything in your life and your dream and your hopes and your momentum down.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that at all? And sort of, because it does explain a bit about the length of time that those of us who have known your music and have seen your potential as a singer, as a songwriter, as a banjo player, and we're excited about your career and wait and sort of thinking, it's got to take off. When's this going to happen?
Yeah. Well, I think it can definitely be a double-edged sword. It can be something that either holds you back or accelerates you, or it could accelerate you a little bit but also keep you in the same place. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it's an incredible learning experience either way. And this record would not have been anything like what it is if I hadn't gone through everything that I went through.
Okay. Well, speaking of what you've gone through, it's been remarkable and indeed historic and personal as a daughter and as a musician, the working with your father in the end of the tour and so beautifully putting it on film, playing a role in putting it on film. And when last we talked a little over a year ago, you and Carl Jackson helped me understand a lot more about who Glenn Campbell was as a man and his, you know, the scope of his artistry. And you clearly just relished every second of the final music, and then there's been this very difficult process of saying goodbye. Can you just talk about these last 3 to 4 years and how that, you know, there's something that's either really compatible with making great art or the last thing you need when you're trying to make an album and start a career, right? So if you take my meaning, what's it been like in a very broad sense?
Oh, man. Well, you know, in a broad sense, I guess I'll start just dealing with having a very close family member with Alzheimer's. It's a long journey, and it stings at first, and then it's kind of, I guess I'd liken it to as a pain. It's like having a thorn kind of stuck in your arm or something all the time, and so it's sharp at points, you know, at some points, but most of the time it's kind of just, it's there, it's a dull ache, and you're just dealing with it on an everyday basis, and you can't pull it out. And so, you know, you learn to deal with long-term grief and pain, and also trying to make the best of it and spend time with the one that you love, even though it's painful to see them that way. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of mixed emotions that go into that, and you have a lot of time to think about it and deal with it or not deal with it. So I definitely think it's going into songwriting in some aspects, and it still will. You know, I'm still dealing with it, and yeah.
What about the timing of when you were writing? I guess I'm asking, did you have stretches of time when you were going in and sitting down with writers, friends, and trying to come up with something when you were literally days or weeks after the funeral or after the taking care of the business and being with your family? Were those two worlds, or did you set music aside for a time and then come back to it when you were ready?
Yeah, I definitely needed to take a break after my dad passed away. I kind of took off and needed to have some time away from Nashville and from everything. So yeah, I like went out to California and spent some time with my best friend. And then I went out to London and Sweden. I visited friends, basically. I needed to get away from everything I, you know, was familiar with. And I went to France and just visited with close friends and kind of went outside of my world a little bit.
Oh yeah. Understood. Yeah. What are your thoughts about legacy, family legacy, music, what you would like people to perceive? We know you want to be seen as Ashley Campbell, an artist there, but there's something quite wonderful about the weaving your sound and what you're delivering and what you're trying to communicate in with this larger picture. Because Glen Campbell was such a classic American mm-hmm. artist. He reached so many kinds of people.
Yeah.
It was popular music, popular pop music, but it also had all these wonderful, genuine strains of roots and country and mm-hmm. And the instrumental, you know, virtuosity, a player's player, in addition to being mm-hmm. a singer. So what a wonderful opportunity and a challenge, right?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I want to be my own artist and have people, you know, like me for me and not just because of who my dad is. But of course, at the same time, I'm so proud of where I came from, and I'm so grateful that I had that upbringing and that I got to just grow up and live around that kind of talent and music. You know, it's like if my artistry is a tapestry, it's got threads from every aspect of my life woven through it, and mostly it's my dad and his musical influence for sure.
Are there some specific little musical insights or stagecraft or things that people might not obviously assume that you'd pick up, that you could remember a little thing that you were like, oh boy, that could be really helpful to me? Are there anything like that? Just those little musical lessons?
Well, you know, here's one example. Just touring with my dad in his goodbye tour when he had Alzheimer's. When you start out playing, you know, your worst fear is like messing up a lyric or like making a mistake. Because when you start a song, it seems like you can't stop once that train starts, you know, otherwise you're going to look terrible or blah, blah, blah. But my dad, just watching because, you know, he knew that he was having some trouble. And so when he would make a mistake, he would just laugh it off and say, I'm going to start that again or something like that. And the audience doesn't care. I mean, obviously you got to be prepared and you got to do your stuff. But like, if you make an honest mistake, like totally blank on a lyric, and you just say, I'm going to get that right, you know, as long as you don't panic.
Right.
As long as you don't look uncomfortable, the audience is not going to remember that. Or if they do remember it, they're going to be like, wow, they were so at ease on stage. That was cool. I even saw Jackson Brown do it one time.
Yeah.
He started These Days and he started singing the wrong lyrics. He's like, wait, those are the lyrics. Sorry, guys, I got to start over. Those are the original lyrics that I started to write and I changed.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Wow.
We got the demo. And
yeah. And no one cared
so
that Jackson Brown started over a song, you know?
That's something that I began to realize about improvisers, about jazz musicians, mm-hmm. that there were no mistakes, that there's a sort of fluidity and an error. If you dwell on it even as for a microsecond,
yeah.
you've lost your flow in time. But if you get yourself comfortable mm-hmm. to keeping it, then the rest of the world probably doesn't even know anything has happened.
Exactly.
It's fascinating.
When I was first starting out just touring and playing in front of live audiences, I would play banjo or something, and I'd be like, oh, I missed that one or two notes. And to me, it was a disaster. And I was
wow.
I've failed myself. I've failed all of you. And then, like, I would really get down on myself. And then, you know, people would come up to me after the show and be like, that was amazing. How do you play so well? And I'm like, And I used to say something. I used to be like, no, I was terrible. I messed up here. And I've learned to just keep my mouth shut, you know, take the compliment.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
How much experience have you had as a front person performing for audiences? I've been puzzled by that, whether you've had tours, whether you've had stretches. I just don't know that. But how much have you been Ashley Campbell on stage billed as?
I've been Ashley Campbell, the artist, pretty much since I moved to Nashville.
Okay.
I started out as a duo with my brother Shannon. We were called Victoria Ghost. So we've been just performing shows like that as front people, and then I kind of branched out as my own, as just Ashley Campbell in I think it was 2014.
Yeah.
So I've just been playing shows and getting experience.
Have you gone out on other people's bills and done the opening thing, or have you done a lot more of the, let's get in the van with a small band and go hit clubs and find, you know, work with a booking agent or book yourself? I mean, what's that been like?
So far, it's been mostly, you know, smaller gigs or like festival things or state fair kind of things. But I'm definitely hoping to get on a tour sometime soon. I just want to play more and more shows, because every show I get like so much better. You learn from every single performance.
There is no substitute, is there?
Yeah.
You just came back from the UK, I think, with some dates there.
Mm-hmm. I did 2 weeks. I did the C2C festival.
Mm-hmm.
I got to play the main arena, and that was really cool. I did a tribute to my dad and played Remembering, and it was just such an incredible experience. And then I played a small tour with Mo Pitney and Ryan Kinder.
Mm-hmm. The song Remembering really... so moving, and it's interesting that will be, I'm sure that's a song that people who know you and who come to see you or who see you once will have pretty fixed in their in their hearts, and that it'll be something that people will request of yours for a long, long time.
Yeah, I can't leave that out of a show anytime soon.
But it's a pretty neat sort of a signifier. It's a pretty cool calling card, because it does tell the audience quickly how you think as a songwriter and how good you are as a songwriter. It's like, oh, that's an impressive. That's not maudlin. It's not just a nice tribute. It's a really well-crafted song that people can carry away. Like, yeah, I think there's a lot more where that came from. You know, if you get it, you see what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a hit for the right reasons.
Thank you.
Tell me more about the role of your brothers, because they were both involved in the record, right?
Yes. I co-produced the album with my brother, Cal. He lives in Los Angeles, and he's an incredible engineer, producer, and drummer, and everything. He plays everything and sings, and so it was really fun. And I got my start in music, you know, learning about just anything that had to do with recording just by watching Cal. And I was in an indie pop rock band with him when I first started out, called Instant People. And so that's where I got my first taste of recording. And so that's why I wanted to go back to Cal, to where I started, to record my album after all that I've learned from songwriting and just being in Nashville. Because Cal and I have this really great relationship together, and we'll just like woodshed in the studio, you know, as opposed to in Nashville, a lot of the time it's like time is money. You only have this amount of time in the studio and you're paying these musicians this much. And it's stressful, because that's not super conducive to great art, because you can't experiment, because every experiment costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
So Cal had his own studio in his house, and we just would like stay up till all hours of the night, and just him and me just doing songs, and I would push play on Pro Tools, and he would be playing drums, and then he'd go in and push play, and I'd play something. Mm-hmm. It was really cool.
Nice. We spoke before. You said he tends to push you toward the world of pop and more of an affected sound, and you are the tension in the other direction, but in the middle, you like where that tension brings you, right?
That's what I wanted. I wanted him to bring me a little more out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like that zone. I like being, you know, I like someone bringing something to the table that I couldn't.
Do you find yourself, do you play a very different set if you get booked at a Telluride or a Grey Fox versus a, you know, more of an arena or some other setting? Do you feel like that may be you going ahead, kind of adopting the different parts of what you love as a musician to the audience?
Yeah, I would definitely cater the show more towards a bluegrass-loving crowd. Because that's super fun, you know, why not? But I have learned not to change too much what I do based on the audience, because I have a song called Looks Like Time, and the chorus is, "Looks like time has kicked your ass." And when I first started playing it, I was worried, you know, will I offend some older people or younger, like little kids or something? But I, last year I played a set for basically no one was under like 70 years old, the whole audience. And they love "Time Has Kicked Your Ass."
Great.
Like, you know, it's, so I just learned, just do my thing. And it's human emotions. Whatever's in my song, it's something that people can relate to at any age, you know?
Right. Yeah, that one's got a bit of a punchline, and that that's a part of your personality that pops up through this record here and there. Just a winky, funny line here and there. Well played and chosen. Why'd you pick The Lonely One as a title and a title track?
Well, it's kind of a theme throughout the record. Like, almost all the songs, except maybe like two, are about breakups or, you know, reflections on being alone, or either that or independence. You know, the great part of being alone is the independent part and the knowing yourself part. So I think the theme in that is standing out there on your own. So I liked the title, The Lonely One, as opposed to like a self-titled album.
Okay. And Better Boyfriend being kind of your lead-off single, is that right? Is that kind of out there as the...
It wasn't the first single, but it is the latest single.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to save it for like when it started getting warmer, you know? Like kind of a summer single, you know?
Summer liberation song.
Yeah.
Well, great. So tonight you're going to play the Station Inn and then do the Grand Ole Opry, huh?
Yes.
That's the Nashville circuit, if ever there was one.
Yeah.
That speaks to where you come from.
Yeah, the Opry is so good to me. They're such sweet people. It's like going to a family reunion every time.
Then what happens for the rest of the year? Can you cast out? Have you made a sense of what you'd like this year to be, given that we're finally, you have a record to show people and sell, and also important. And but it creates an identity. It creates a sense that the momentum is there. So what do you envision the rest of 18 looking like?
Well, I would absolutely love to go on tour, you know, jump on someone else's tour and just play as many shows and get in front of as many audiences as possible. You know, and work with my band and really put together an amazing live show. I've got some dates in the UK again, so we're focusing on that a lot. I'm going over there in June and in September, and I'm playing in Europe for the first time, doing Germany and Amsterdam. So I'm just really excited for what may come. You know, this is kind of a fly by the seat of your pants year because I don't have a record label, so I'm kind of doing everything on my own with my manager and my agent, you know, and we're trying to get everything we can.
Great. Best of luck with it. The record is a lot of fun, and there's some real contemplative stuff on here, and it's a lot to chew on as time goes by. It's a terrific record. So
thank you.
Good to talk to you, Ashley.
Good talking to you.